Welcome to the Authentically American Podcast, featuring inspiring stories from great Americans who are making a difference. Your host is West Point grad, former Army Ranger, and founder of Authentically American, Dean Wegner.
Welcome to the Authentically American Podcast. I'm your host, Dean Wegner, and today I'm joined by my new friend and great American, Jason Johnson. Jason is the president and CEO of Canine Solutions International and the founder of Project Canine Hero. Jason is a former police officer, canine trainer and handler, and has worked with over 2,000 canine heroes. Jason is dedicating his life to giving retired canine heroes the life they deserve when their service is complete. Jason has a tremendous story of service to some of America's most often overlooked heroes. I know you'll enjoy hearing his story as much as I did today. Well, Jason, welcome, and I'm honored to have you here as a guest on the Authentically American Podcast. Thank you for making the trip from Chattanooga to Nashville.
Thank you for having me. I'm honored to be here.
Yeah, and I'm so excited to dig in and hear more about your story. And you know, we've been doing our podcast now for a year. I always find it so interesting when we start to dig into the stories, how much of people's stories start when they're younger, start in their grown-up years. So take me back to you growing up and what it was like.
Well, I grew up in a small town in Michigan, and I knew my entire life I wanted to be a soldier. My grandfather served in World War II and Korean War, and one in the Navy was Navy Seabee, and one was a U.S. Marine. And I just knew that that was the path I was going to take. So all through high school, I came in on the delayed entry program. I wanted to get in law enforcement, wanted to be a police officer. So I joined as a U.S. Army military police officer in 1993. Didn't even know about the dog program. I had no idea that we had military working dogs. I didn't know anything about it until I got in the military. I spent just 5 years as an Army MP, and I wanted to get out and be a canine officer, a SWAT canine officer, and that's what I ended up doing.
So did you have pets growing up?
I did. I grew up with a German short-haired pointer named Ginger, had her from the age of 5 to 18. So that was our childhood pet, and to this day, our program, we take care of German short-haired pointers because we use them a lot in the airports for explosive detection.
So you had a background, knew you were going to the military.
Yes.
But the canine part was something new.
It took me a little bit to develop in that. I came in, like I said, in 93. So when I got to the police department, got out of the military, I was the youngest person on the police department at the time. So naturally, the canine guys were trying to get me in the suit and put on the bite seat. So I did that for several years. It's hard to, a canine officer is 1% of the whole department or less. And, we're the 1% of the 1% of the 1% and was to be a police canine handler. So I volunteered my time for almost 6 years, going to trainings, learning as much as I could about the canine industry, putting on the bite suit, learning about detection dogs, until I got my opportunity to become a narcotics canine handler.
Got it. So you knew something you wanted, you went after it.
Absolutely. And that's, canine, just like any other form of the branch of the military, it's hard work. And you can't expect someone just to give you the position. You have to go out and earn it. And that's what, it's because being a canine handler, you have to put in the hard work. And I think, I'm just lucky when the opportunity came up that I was able to get the position.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of people have no idea what goes into the training and the background, what it takes to get there. So share a little bit about that whole journey. I mean, you studied for 6 years, but then there's the formal part of it as well. Yeah, tell me what it's like.
And that was after I did my 5 years as a military police officer at that. So
go back to the military because, you had to be trained. So what, because I'd also like to understand a little bit what it was like, in the military versus on the police force.
Sure. So never really had an opportunity to become a canine handler when I was in the military. I would have had to re-enlist for another 5 years, and I knew I wanted to get out and, become a civilian police canine.
Okay.
And so my first 3 years in the Army, I was over in Germany, Wiesbaden, Mainz. I worked at a SCIF, and that was with an intelligence unit. So you don't see a lot of MPs assigned to an intelligence unit, but I was for 3 years. And, of course, there's no dogs there. And it's just kind of like any other job in the military, you got to be in the right spot at the right time.
Oh, yeah.
And during my 5 years, that right spot and right time never really meshed up. I did have an option right before I got out to re-enlist to go to canine school, but I thought getting out and getting in the civilian police world would have been was my long-term goal. So that's what I ended up doing there. But I enjoyed my time in the military very much. Had a lot of great success there. But I also felt in a way that it was holding me back. that you know, I wanted to excel and do things, and they only let you go so far and do so much. So I was excited to get out into the civilian police world where I could just keep trying to build my career.
Fantastic. So, you know, continue then, because I'm just fascinated mm-hmm. about what all it takes, you know,
sure.
to be trained yourself and then for the dogs to be trained.
Well, dog selection and canine handler selection is equally important.
Mm-hmm.
If you have the wrong person in the job, just like maybe being a pilot, the person you're selecting is very important.
Okay.
They can really make or break your program. Mm-hmm. Things that the handler needs to have is a very good work ethic. They need to understand that being a canine handler requires pretty much attention to that job every day. You can't just put the dog away and get back with it in 3 or 4 days. When your days off aren't really days off, you have your dog with you. You have to do maintenance training. You have to do this upkeep. And then you're on call outs. I worked with DEA Task Force, so I was on call 24/7.
Maybe. So that dog's pretty much with you all the time.
Absolutely.
It's not like
when you're a professional
mm-hmm.
canine handler, you spend more time with your dog than you do anybody in your family, because they're with you at work, they're with you at home, they're with you on vacation, they're almost always with you 24/7. So, but going back into the training, there's different functions mm-hmm. of different dogs, and I've been fortunate to work with all different aspects of canine and over my career. A narcotics dog might take 6 to 8 weeks to train because there's not as many odors mm-hmm. to be trained on, where an explosive dog may take 8 to 12 weeks because you're training on a lot more different odors, where a patrol tracking dog, where you have to worry about the discipline, the obedience, and all of the other things, you know, that can take up to 20, 24 weeks.
Wow.
Because it's just like any other level mm-hmm. of training and anything else in life. The harder the job is, the more training
right.
you need. And that's just to get certified out on the street. Basically, once you become a canine team, you have to work on it almost every day, and then the federal law mandates 8 hours of training a week of weekly maintenance training to upkeep your skills and annual certification.
Fascinating. I had
yeah.
no idea.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just because, you know, there's a lot of different dog breeds out
yeah.
there. Are there certain dog breeds that are more attuned to being
there? There sure is. So uh-huh. Dogs have 17 drives, and for detection work, we look at the hunt, the air scent, the prey and retrieve. Those are the four top drives that we look at. This is the dog's going to be good for detection work, let's say. And then the other factors when we're testing dogs for police or military work is environmental confidence. That dog needs to come into a building like this, be able to be in the airport, and have that environmental confidence. Cannot be scared of elevators, escalators, groups of people, loud noises, in some cases gunfire, things of that nature. So you test it for that. And then sociability. A good police canine or military working dog should be able to be around other people and be social without, mm-hmm. without, you know, fear of biting or somebody or a child or anything of that nature. So yeah, there's a lot of testing that goes into it. And over my career, I've been able to develop and I've published some works where I have a 100-point scoring system on how I mm-hmm. test and evaluate dogs.
Got it. So what breeds really lend themselves to being a great canine?
Well, what you'll see in the police and military for the patrol tracking, you know, your aggression and bite dogs, you're going to see the German Shepherd, the Belgian Malinois, and the Dutch Shepherd as the three primary breeds used mm-hmm. for that. In special operations, in our soft community, you're going to see the Belgian Malinois used primarily. And the reason is they're just a very driven, hard-focused dog, and they have the physical skills and abilities mm-hmm. to do the job of a soft operator. The Shepherds are a little more obedient, but they don't run as fast, they don't bite as hard as the Belgian Malinois does. It's kind of more of the,
wow.
you'll see that a lot. And when you talk about detection work, and I've been fortunate to work in, you know, federal law enforcement and civilian law enforcement and train a lot, you know, over 1,000 military working dogs at the time when I was at ATF, you'll see all different types of breeds in detection work. Again, mm-hmm. they just have to have the certain drives. But the primary ones, you'll see the Labrador Retriever used, you'll see the German Short-Haired Pointer. You may see some mixtures of breeds of the sporting breeds. They're all capable of doing the job. And then the Shepherds and the Malinois, again, can yeah. also do detection work, and they might be cross-trained to both search for explosives and be a bite apprehension dog.
Got it. Does it ever not work out? So a dog gets selected, you do
it
all
does.
The testing,
yeah,
you've got the 100-point test, and then...
Oh, you know, it's just like when you're selecting, uh-huh. You know, someone for a military job. you try to do your best to vet them out, and sometimes it just doesn't work. With those dogs, they usually end up getting placed maybe into a different program or adopted out, you know, whether it be the military or police. A lot of the vendors have guarantees if you select a dog from a vendor that, hey, it's going to get through training. If not, you can bring it back and try another one. But you want to make sure you're making the best determination because you're putting a lot of time and energy and money into it. You don't want to get halfway through the process to start over again.
Got it. So you talked a lot about the training and the dogs and how many weeks that takes. How about on the handler side?
Well, that can be just as important. A lot of times you'll sometimes if it's a detection dog, a trainer might kind of get it started, but during those time frames I've given you, it's a team effort. So they paired up with the handler and they're going through those actions together.
Got it. And how's that match happen? Because there's a lot of chemistry in that relationship and that bond.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So when I was working at ATF as a, you know, as an instructor there, that was my job to match up dogs and handlers. So you want to learn about the person. Do they have kids at home? You know, where do they live? You know, what's the temperature like there? I've been putting different dogs. Someone who has like a hyper personality, you might want to give them a dog that matches that. And someone who's really laid back and methodical, you might want to give them a dog who is more laid back, you know. So you really have to get to know the handler, and you know, as a trainer, you get to know the dog
it's
pretty
more
well.
Art than science, it sounds like.
It is. It's an art. I've been fortunate to place hundreds of dog teams together, and I've really never had someone come back to me and say that I made a bad decision. Because over time, they take the dog home, they get to know it, and they just fall in love with it. And it becomes their partner, and maybe that dog goes on to save their life, save their partner's life, save their family's life. And it's a bond that it's a bond that really can't be mistaken or even almost put into words.
So Jason, over your career, how many dogs have you had that you've been the handler for?
I've handled over 15 dogs operationally, as far as like being certified to handle that dog, and that's been in the civilian police force. I was in Iraq, Afghanistan, working for the U.S. government as an ambassador's protection detail, handle a lot of dogs there through my company with Canine Solutions International, and I'm the CEO of Paradigm Defense Concepts. We still do a lot of dog canine training through there, and in I can name each dog if each dog was different.
Like your children.
Just like that. Canine Flash was my law enforcement dog. She inspired me to start Project Canine Hero. I got her back in retirement. She didn't have a home to go to. She was with another handler, and they couldn't keep her, and they called me when I was working in D.C. if I could get her. And over a period of time, that's what kind of inspired me, that when some of the work I was doing in the government, to start this project. And we have a book called Canine Flash Becomes a Hero, which is my children's book, which really depicts her life and how she went from a street puppy who was a day away from being euthanized to being, you know, the most famous law enforcement dog in America. 2018, we were named the Law Enforcement Dog of the Year by the American Humane.
Oh, wow. So it sounds like if you were going to name one of those 15, that was probably your
Flash, by far, absolutely. You know, some of the dogs I worked in Iraq and Afghanistan were great, saved my life, you know, so I can't really put a price on that or anything. But Flash was my, definitely my partner who really changed my life and led me down this path.
Because that's part of the reason we're here right now, Jason. So tell me more about that story, because you served your country, you were in the Army, you know, served for 5 years, and you spent 6 years, you know, on the police force studying, learning how to be in the canine, and then you make the jump, and then you make this transition. So tell me that story, how we got to this point now.
Yeah, so, 5 years in the Army, 93, 98, then went into civilian law enforcement. I worked at the Puyallup Police, which is right outside Fort Lewis, backside South Hill area of Tacoma. And then I was over at Yakima PD, which is in the central part of the state. And in 2008, I was recruited by Blackwater to go be a canine handler for the U.S. ambassador. That was based on my background. I was a SWAT operator as well. So based on my background as an Army MP, being a SWAT and a canine handler is how I got the call for that. And it was a one-month job interview. And I went down to Moyock, North Carolina, and did my 1 month and passed and ended up going to Iraq. And it was an opportunity I really just couldn't turn down. Couple years later, I was recruited by the ATF, or I went to work for the ATF in Front Row, Virginia, and that's where we teach FBI, CIA, the U.S. Marshals, the Department of State Anti-Terrorism Assistance Program for 21 countries, and got the opportunity to work with probably over 2,000 dogs while I was in that position in the government, and did some really great stuff there, and went over to TSA for my last couple years in the government. The dogs you see in the airports around America, the pasture screening dogs, I was a field canine coordinator under that program, and worked with that quite a bit. And that's, you know, really, really kind of hit me that when these dogs were retiring, nobody was at financially there to help them other than the handler. And that's what really inspired me to get out of the government and take my skills and my knowledge and put it towards Project Canine Hero and help retired police canines and military working dogs.
What normally happens, because probably a lot of people think, well, just like a military service member gets a retirement, so if somebody serves and they're injured, whatever it happens to a dog, what happens to them if they don't?
Three quarters of them do stay with their handler. And then right now we're working on building our rehab rehoming center down in outside of Chattanooga, because not every dog has a place to go to. Some handlers can't keep it for whatever reason. Maybe they're getting a new dog. Maybe they're getting out of law enforcement. Maybe they're taking a new position and they can't keep their dog. So a lot of people contact us about placing a dog. But for the most part, they do stay with their handler. But there's no funding from the agencies they served. And I found probably less than 5% of America, the police departments might have their union, you know, have some funding, but very few times do you see where the city's actually paying the bills in retirement. Now, being a former federal law enforcement canine instructor, I can tell you for certain that the Department of Defense, the ATF, the Department of Justice, Homeland Security, they don't have any programs in place for any of the retired federal canines. And that's what came up with the idea for the Canine Hero Act. And this is what we've been working with Congress. And we have a bill on the floor, H.R. 5081, right now. And on our website, we have a whole page dedicated to the Canine Hero Act. And that's going to help nonprofits like mine. It's open to all nonprofits to help retired law enforcement, federal law enforcement, military working dog pay bills. And that's going to help us with about $5 million over 5 years to use that grant money exclusively to pay for medical bills for retired heroes.
Yeah. And you were sharing some of the stories earlier, because I think, Jason, most people don't realize we've got a smaller dog, a Yorkie Poo, but he is getting up there in age. He's 10 now. So the vet bills start adding up. And you shared some stories that astounded me, the expense.
Yeah, well, you know, a military working dog or a we have K-9 Axel, who's now the Flash has passed as our national ambassador. He served with the ATF Special Response Team, Team 1. Axel did 200 high-risk missions in his life.
Oh, wow.
Those are like Hell's Angels search warrants. Those aren't that's not driving around on patrol. That is a federal search warrant on America's most dangerous criminals. And he survived all 200 operations. But what was put on his body, just like a special operations soldier or an airborne soldier who may have done 200 jumps, there's going to be a wear and tear on a military working dog or a police canine's body that is not on a normal pet. And
my dog's wear and tear is walking around the neighborhood.
Exactly.
Up the stairs.
So, Axel's now 11. He has a lung cancer, which, you know, we're doing a great holistic regimen with him. He's actually survived almost 2 years, even after he only gave us a few months to live. He has PANIS, which is an autoimmune disease in his eyes. He has really bad dermatitis, so he has to eat a special diet because of the food allergies. And, you know, it's just...
It's expensive.
Yeah, he's about $10,000 to $12,000 a year for his special food and medicines that he needs. And, you know, not every police officer, federal agent, or retired military member has that kind of money to put towards their hero. And here's a dog who went out there and served our country so well, protecting us on all these search warrants and apprehending America's most dangerous criminals. I feel as we owe it to Axel. To make sure he has a healthy retirement.
Jason, here combines a couple things from my past, because we've got the common bond where we both served in the Army. And then I spent 5 years of my career at Mars Pet Care.
Okay.
And it is not only a very pet-focused, pet-friendly business, but, got immersed in that culture. And it was amazing to me, the number of people, when you do the consumer research, that if they had to sacrifice between themselves and their pet, their dog, I mean, they were sacrificing themselves. And
absolutely.
I mean, now you put it in the context of this is just not, this is somebody who served their country and then they have the connection to the pets. So I can imagine they're going to do anything to provide for their pets and put them in a bad position.
Yeah. And, we at Project Canine help a lot of active duty soldiers. There's military members out there who get their retired military working dog, but now have a new military working dog. Now, the new one's being taken care of by the government, but the old one's not. And if they're an E-5 in the Air Force, the Marines, or the Army, you know they can't make any extra money. That there's no other way for them to get funding. They can't, you know, necessarily go out and get another job. They only make X number of dollars. And so we're here to help them to make sure that their retired hero doesn't go off medical care just because a bill can't be paid.
Wow. I mean, it's tragic. So when you founded, you know, Project K-9 Hero, what's the vision? What are you looking long term?
You know, it's really gotten to be beyond all my imagination. Uh-huh. You know, I wanted to establish a medical care program. We do medical care, food, and death benefit assistance. To this day, we're sponsored by Sport Dog Food. They'll drop ship food to every program member free at no cost. So if we have a dog in the program and they can have one of the formulas of Sport Dog Food, they just ship it right to them, no cost to us. We do a death benefit where we pay. And unfortunately, we had a canine pass away yesterday, and we had one pass away today. So as being the founder of an organization of this size, you know, back-to-back program member losses isn't always part of the business you want to think about, but it is part of the business because we're helping elderly retired heroes. Mm-hmm. And we have an artist who does a 24x36 custom portrait that we give to the handler. They keep forever, and they're just beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
We have a lot of them on our Facebook and Instagram page. People can see. And I just really was trying to kind of focus on those things, but now I get so many calls from police departments all over the nation. Hey, can you take this dog or that dog? So that's why we bought the 177 acres of Project K-9 Hero Land outside of Chattanooga, where we're developing a 14-run rehab rehoming facility for police canines. And we have an adoption process on our application on our website. But what will generally happen now is, well, we're going to have two cabins down there where you can come stay for the weekend, secured break areas, hiking trails, where you can interact with the canine there with your family and see if it's a good fit for you. But not only a good fit for you, but is it a good fit for the dog? And that's something that we'll be able to evaluate right on site. And when I founded this, I had no idea that we'd ever buy 177 acres that's going to have a memorial pond with a stone with every dog that's ever served in our program. You know, we run on a very small budget. We've gotten to the size we are today with no office. I have a staff. We have two full-time employees. Mm-hmm. The rest volunteer and some part-time, and they all work from home. So we have to manage that across the country. Well, it's hard to run an organization this size without an office. So we're out there looking for corporate sponsors right now. Places like Mars, who want to get involved, who wants to put their name on the rehab rehome facility to help us build it. And it's going to be quite the project. And
I still have friends there, Jason. So we'll help make some introductions
absolutely.
To Mars.
Yeah, we're excited about that.
Uh-huh. So 177 acres, you know, plus what you're building. So that was not an inexpensive proposition.
It was not.
No. So you've obviously done well with the fundraising and really hit an emotional chord with people. So what's been the key to that fundraising for you?
I just think telling true stories, being authentic.
I like that word.
It's we write the stories, and all I have to do is tell them the truth about this dog. This is Canine Axel. Mm-hmm. He did 200 high-risk operations with the ATF Special Response Team. And here is his list of medical issues. If people follow our page, I post receipts on there so people can see. This last month, we had K-9 Lore from Live PD. Just retired. He's got millions of fans. And he had an intestinal issue, $8,200. That handler just left his position at the sheriff's office. He wasn't in a position, you know, to help pay all that. You're not expecting your retired K-9 to get a bill for $8,200. Had to go up to Missouri University and get it done. But we post that. So people who donated for that cause, they can look at the inventory and see all the pricing right there and say, hey, if you donate for K-9 Lore, this is the bill. You know, I just black out the, you know, personal information. And I think people see that, okay, these guys are legit. This is the bill. This is what we paid for. And we post, you know, photos of the dogs. And it's just anybody who supports police and military, it's something easy to get behind.
Jason, I love that personal touch because as we were introduced and starting to learn more about what you do, I've loved to read those stories myself. I mean, you guys do a great job. And I thought you had a much bigger staff.
No, it's me. I work about 100 hours a week on it. And, you know, I volunteered the first 3 years. Mm-hmm. Everything, you know, with a nonprofit's public information. I didn't take a salary the first 3 years. When I left the government, I left my easy cush government job I could have just retired at and been fine for the rest of my life. And I made a decision that I was going to follow my passion and do this, and it's paid off. Yeah. It's paid off for sure.
A couple of fun things I want to highlight, because you know there's a great military tradition, Red, which is for Red, Remember Everyone Deployed, and that's a Friday tradition often, but I know you've had a fun twist on that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So we developed REDD, Remember Every Dog Deployed, and I think it's something fun people get behind. You know, on Friday, we encourage them to wear their Red Project by Project Canine Hero, and it helps us. Not only people show support, but it helps us raise money for the military working dogs that we're taking care of. Yeah. And we're trying to really push the Red collection. We have all different cups and apparel and different things to help fund the facility that we're trying to build down in outside of Chattanooga.
Yeah, fantastic. And I know another thing I want to highlight, because didn't I see a big picture view in New York City with a big branding behind you?
Yes, absolutely. So I got invited to be a live guest on NASDAQ Trade Talks last Wednesday, February 11th, and that was my birthday. That was my 45th birthday.
It's quite a birthday present they gave you.
It was, and they were wonderful with us. You know, we had a really nice live interview that was right there at the closing bell ceremony. We were there for the closing bell ceremony, and then they let me go outside and right there in Times Square put our logo up there.
Did you know they're going to be putting that big backdrop?
They told me they were going to do it for me, and they left it up there for a couple minutes, and I don't know what the you know, of course, that was at no cost to us, but I could only imagine what the marketing advertising cost is in Times City on something that big. But I think it really helps when we talk about corporations like Mars, who might look into us and go, okay, what's this Project Canine Hero about, or what's Jason Johnson all about, and sees that we're out there working with NASDAQ, or sees that we're working with other large companies, or, you know, I'm working with Congress on the Canine Hero Act. And I think that legitimizes who we are, who I am as a founder, and wants to get other people involved to say, you know, maybe we do want to put our name on that building and sponsor part of this this rehab rehoming center. And I think you really can't put a price on it. You can't.
And you know, I mean, the fact that you start to publish and provide details, I think that, as I learn more about that, Jason, has to have been a key driver, because so often when we write a check, which we'd love to do, we believe in giving back. We're like, okay, I wonder where it went.
Right.
I wonder what was done, and you provide that full disclosure.
Yeah, I think it's important when people are donating for a dog, and it's easy. We get the receipts, and again, we just put it out there. I know we just worked on the Giving Tuesday things together. Every day we're out there, and I can't do them all. I do specific ones, because every day we're paying bills. Every day we have dogs going to the vet, and we're paying bills. So I try to highlight some of the key ones. We lost a dog yesterday, Canine Adler. We have an artist who... we pay for the painting to be done. We had one pass away today. We'll pay. We had cremation services we paid for yesterday, and we have another one we'll be paying for today. So, you know, we don't post them all, but we try to post some of those, you know, from what you guys did from the Giving Tuesday. That would help pay for one of the portraits the handler is going to be able to keep as part of our end of duty services and hang in their house forever and cherish.
So, Jason, just to put some perspective on the magnitude, how many, you know, canine, you know, dogs are out there that would fit into somebody that you know, you would be able to serve? How many are there?
Well, there's different numbers on it. You know, from far as we can do the research, we look at somewhere around 20,000 dogs who are active in the United States. And that's your local police, your state, your sheriff's office, your military, all your federal programs. And I think that's probably a close number. I mean, it'd be almost really difficult to really
just
determine.
Ballpark.
Yeah, but about 20,000, you figure... about 10% of those probably retire a year based on the age, you know. So if 10%, which is, you know, 2,000 retire in a year, we're only reaching, we have over 50 in our program right now. We have over 100 applications. We're trying to help the ones who need our help
the
most.
So you've got 50 right now.
Over 50. We helped. And again, two passed away this week. We'll take some more in the program. And it that's our operating size right now, and until we get the office up. Now, the Canine Hero Act goes through. My office will be able to accommodate up to 20 staff members, and that will really help us grow. I foresee, I think we could max out about 200 to 250 dogs would be a comfortable level for me to manage.
And even that, Jason's a small number, and that's what I want people that are, you know, our audience who listens says, well, Jason's got it going. He's just got this 177-acre facility. He's taking care of all these dogs. He's in New York City on NASDAQ. You know what? Let me look at another cause to donate, but there's so much more you can do.
Oh, there's so much more. I mean, and this is what I tell all of our nonprofit partners who do kind of what we do. If we all work together, we're only going to reach about 10% of that. And look at the same way with veterans, right? How many veterans are out there struggling in life or have issues with PTSD or anything? If we were all working to help them, we're not going to ever reach 100% of them. I mean, we only can put so many programs in place and help the ones that need our help the most. Yeah.
So, Jason, if somebody wants to get on board, wants to learn more about you, wants to help, want to contribute, how do they best do that?
Going to our website at projectcaninehero.org is great, and you'll see the some of the heroes we have in our program. You'll see our shop on there where we have our apparel. We have some drinkware. We have hats. We have all different types of things with our branding on it. People can donate for those and kind of show their support there. But following us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram at Project Canine Hero is great. We post on there daily updates on dogs in our program. And, you know, I realize that, you know, times can be tough and not everyone has extra money to donate. But even if you just get on there and share the message or tell your friends or share one of our posts, that's just sometimes as helpful as making a donation. And, you know, we really appreciate all the donors we have, but I also appreciate people who just support what we do.
Yeah, and I think even if they don't, I love that point where get on and read some of those stories because they are powerful, they're impactful, and if you're a dog lover especially.
Yes, absolutely. These canine heroes, they dedicate their life to working for the American public and making our country safe. Mm-hmm. You know, as a career canine person, I say one is the most honorable job in the world, most honorable profession, and I feel that we underutilize the canine profession too. I think with you look at the explosive dogs, that we can really up our security at a lot of our events, a lot of our where anytime we got public people coming in masses, that we could have a lot more dogs out there because I think they're just one of the best layers of security that we as the American public can have.
And Jason, Man, I should have known this, but you really highlighted this, that you know when you choose to be a canine handler, it's really a lifetime decision because the dog is going to be with you pretty much everywhere you go, and
absolutely.
So often they come with you.
Yeah, it's such a great work, and it's so rewarding. It's hard work, though. You know, and there's frustrating times, and really learning the craft isn't easy. Being a canine handler is hard, but, you know, when I was a police canine, I was a SWAT officer, we're the person that calls when the police can't figure it out. Mm-hmm. When someone has the worst day in their life, they call the police. And then when the police can't figure it out, they call the canine handler. And then it's up to us. And the same thing when I worked in Iraq and Afghanistan for the U.S. ambassador. I've done everything from the president on down. 100% my responsibility to sweep that building before a meeting of heads of different countries. Mm-hmm. And you really can't afford to make a mistake.
No. There's zero
absolutely
room for that. So, Jason, one last question. This is a question I always like to ask our guests because we are 1 year behind you in launching Authentically American, and we're a veteran-owned, American-made apparel brand. Mm-hmm. And I always love to ask the question, what does it mean to you to be Authentically American?
I think to me it just means being who you are and let people see you know, your morals, your ethics, and let them know what your passion and vision is. And I think by verbally putting that out there, we try to do every day as me as the founder of Project Canine Hero. I think that's why we have so much support because we are authentic.
Oh, yeah. Well, you are, put that definition number two right next to us because you are living that the way you are handling, you know, what you're doing, that full disclosure. So I love it. And Jason, thank you for investing the time here. And I always like to hand a gift as well because, you know, two things. I like to joke that nobody wears ties anymore.
Okay.
So socks are the new ties. So these are one of our very own Authentically American Patriotic Socks.
Thank you so
the
much.
Red and blue design.
Yep.
And if you feel those, Jason, those are Carolina cotton, knit in Carolina. So they're incredibly soft.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what you'll notice the first time you wear them, not only be comfortable, but you pull them up the first time, they don't fall down, they don't sag. They're designed to be not only made in America, but a better performing sock.
Awesome.
So the other one I thought you'd like, being a fellow Army veteran, have you seen anything on the sweat-activated printing?
I have seen when you, on your product catalog.
Yeah, so it's more powerful and impactful. But you know, this, if you feel this, because you've got the red shirts, but you feel how soft that is, and you feel the water-based ink that we use. Everything we do is tagless. But if you hold this, this will be like kindergarten show and tell.
Yeah.
So we'll cheat here, Jason. But normally this is sweat activated, so this will be more moisture activated. But this is the A for Army, which I thought you'd enjoy being an Army veteran. But you know, what you do when you sweat, you can see this hidden message that starts to appear. So
that's awesome.
This is that Go Army message. And then if you flip it to the back, so that's our equivalent, the Nike swoosh. That's our vintage U.S. flag. And then it's the, you know, Go Army, you know, beat Navy. And then the response is often beat them. So what's been fun, Jason, with this is, you know, just like the pictures that you're posting, we've had hundreds, if not thousands, of people posting pictures and videos. And I've actually had a few people in a fun way curse me and say, doggone it, Dean, I was wearing your shirt when I was working out and the sweat wasn't coming, so had to work harder.
There you go.
So I know with the hours you're keeping, I know you still got to get an occasional workout, so hopefully this will be your new favorite pair of socks and your new favorite shirt to work out.
Absolutely. I'll wear it with pride.
Well, Jason, you are one of our American heroes. You've served our country so well and continue to make a difference, so it was an honor to have you here as a guest today.
Thank you for having me, sir.
All right. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Authentically American podcast. You can follow Authentically American on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, and find all our episodes at authenticallyamerican.us/podcast. If you haven't yet, go to Apple Podcasts to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Thank you for listening.